with the process of meditation. So why do we meditate? And for what goal in the future are we aiming for? So one of the main reasons that we start to practice and sustain the meditation practice over time is because we see the benefits, the good results that we get over the weeks and months as time passes. And naturally, one of the most significant principles is like peace of mind and emotional balance. And especially, you know, in today's world where people are under just more and more economic pressure, and you know, money's more difficult to come by, and the employment situation's much more restricted than it was previously, and cost of living's going up. So you know, a lot of the pressure that we see with people is coming from the state of the economy. So we can't necessarily control the external conditions which are going on around us, and so we have to be able to say, like, regulate the internal conditions inside the mind. And so, you know, naturally, you know, when we look over the course of our life, you know, all sorts of different things, you know, come and go, and you know, we meet different people and we part, and you know, our best friends can become our enemies, and all sorts of topsy-turvy things can go on as the months and the years go by. So it's of great fruit and benefit to have a level of emotional stability in order to cope with all the stuff that we have to deal with in this particular lifetime that we experience. And that you know, that experience of emotional balance or stability comes from this sense of, you know, training the mind, you know, with the a suitable meditation object. Because as one, you know, develops that practice of sustaining one's focus, one's attention of the meditation object, which suits one's personality, that the result of this is increasing peacefulness of mind and a sense of like a lack of like wavering. You know, the mind doesn't you know, isn't easily sort of tipped into thoughts and different thoughts and feelings. So, you know, even if the people around you are going completely bananas, that you can essentially maintain your stability, your center or your still point, regardless of you know, what people are doing around you. And so you know, when we look at the overall scheme of things, you know, very, very difficult to control circumstances, events, people's behavior, one's own emotions to a degree. And so having a very firm sense of stability is very incredibly useful. And that will be a source of real happiness for you. And you know, all the Dharma talks in the world, you know, you can get a degree of benefit, but any sort of solid meditators, especially the monastics, you know, though I've been in the monastery here for about 15 years. I was in Thailand for 2 years. I was in Europe for a couple of years. I was on the East Coast for a couple of years. That, you know, I mean, 90% of your own insight and understanding actually comes from your own practice. And you know, you may find certain teachers quite inspiring and encouraging, but you know, essentially they're just pointing you in the right direction, and you are the one who has to do the work, and I say, like, walk the walk, as they say. And so as we develop the meditation, that you're not only looking at pure samatha, you know, the ability to develop samatha, because that's only half the business. You know, your insight practice is the other 50% of the training, because one thing that you see very, very clearly is that when any of the regular meditators, you know, anyone who has any kind of daily practice, even if it's only 5 minutes, which is still quite it's still beneficial, you know, as you'll see a person change even in the course of, say, like a 4 week cycle. You'll definitely see that changes in that person even with 5 minutes a day. And so, you know, the test will be exactly where your practice is at when, you know, when things go wrong, or, you know, you know when your parents are dying and you have to care for them, and you know, when your siblings turn against you, or all sorts of amazing things can happen in your life, will essentially put you to the test, maybe in a small or large way, and you know, you'll see exactly where the quality of your practice is. And so, you know, so meditation is not just for peacefulness of mind. That's only half the practice. So the other half is wisdom, insight, understanding, and you know, like letting go, like real letting go. So when, you know, people, you know, when you're put to the test, you don't fall apart, you don't necessarily run away, and you can either deal with things to a certain degree, but you know, you may have to either say detach or withdraw or say like abide in a state of equanimity, because you really can't do anything else. So you know, all the qualities that you develop from the meditation are quite valuable in a real sense over the course of one's life. And you know, and naturally the people around you, they benefit from your practice, because they see your good qualities over time, and they can actually feel them. They can, it's not just you just don't talk the talk. They can actually feel it, you know, if somebody's developing, especially within the family, because they're quite close to you, and they spend hours with you on a daily basis. So I thought maybe I'll just mix this one up just a little bit. We'll do maybe just as a change, and this was proposed by one of the monks at the monastery who's really into visualization, and he's got some really interesting ideas that I've never heard even in the last 20 years. This guy's really creative. I could possibly tell you about it later, but he sort of put a seed in my mind that, yeah, maybe the monks, instead of going on and on about the breath meditation, we'll just give it maybe a little twist, and we'll do like a visualization for 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll go to the breathing meditation. But I just want to see what the effect of this kind of visualization meditation, if it actually does anything for you. You know, you'll see that quite clearly when we go to the breathing meditation. So just get yourself in a comfortable position with your spine upright and your head upright but comfortable. Make sure there's nothing tight around the throat, the waist, and the wrists, which constricts breathing in any way. And so we're going to do a little visualization. What I want you to do is I want you to imagine that you're on a desert island, and on this desert island you will be reclining very comfortably in your banana chair, with your nice, maybe something like a banana and mango fruit smoothie at your side. So just imagine a little table on the left with your iced smoothie, and you're relaxing on your banana chair. And just, I want you to gaze at the ocean. And as we gaze upon the ocean, we see the sparkling blue sea, and the waves, small waves like rolling in to the shoreline and coming up on the golden sand, and just lapping up to the shore, and then just slowly receding and moving back into the main body of the ocean. And on this sandy shore that we're relaxing on, there's a mix of both banana and coconut trees, full size trees with fruit on the boughs. So just imagine lovely bunches of ripe bananas and ripe coconuts, just ready for the picking. But we won't get up just yet. We'll just be gazing at the ocean as the waves, slowly and smoothly just rolling into the shoreline and receding gently back into the ocean. And so just imagine as well on this shoreline, because we're on the beachfront, there's a breeze, a gentle breeze, moving through the forest which is behind you. So you can see that the leaves and the palms in the forest section, at the frontal section, the breeze is just gently moving the fronds and the palms and the leaves in the trees. And so as we gaze out, you'll see the occasional seagull moving through the air gracefully, just gliding on this beautiful breeze which is moving along the beachfront as we delight in the waves, moving into the shoreline. So what we'll do now, so as we've had a nice little rest there, and our smoothie is all well and finished, we'll just imagine just slowly getting up, and just get yourself up into an upright position, and just gently stand up. And keep gazing at the sea. And what I want you to do now is just to turn around slowly and just take nice slow steps, and you can feel your toes just like squeaking in the clean golden sand on the edge of the forest. And we may have to walk maybe possibly about 20 or 30 meters through the sand before we reach a forest walk, a forest trail. And it's not a huge trail. It's just big enough for one person to walk slowly through. And as we step into the forest, you can feel the pine needles and the dried leaves under your toes, and you can hear the leaves just sort of cracking gently as you're walking through, and the touch of the leaves as they brush past against you, brushing your shoulders as you move through this small forest trail. And so as we move slowly in this setting, going, moving into and deeper into the forest, you'll notice the sun, the rays of sunlight just breaking through the forest canopy, golden rays of light moving through and sparkling in the tree line. And as one looks up and sees the change in the light and the color, just you'll see like small lorikeets and parrots, resting on branches in some of the larger, say, like fig and banyan trees. These large, very very these trees that you see with very very large trunks and big boughs, and you'll see the wildlife, the wild birds with their plumage. And just imagine you see the different types of macaws with blue, green and yellow foliage. And just imagine that you see a macaw with a green headdress and frontal section. And as you move back along this particular species of macaws, the green moves down into an aqua, and then a bluish tinge on the feathers. And towards as you move down the back of the macaw, you see the yellow tail feathers protruding from this particular creature as it's just moving slowly and gently, searching for seeds and pods to nibble on in the upper branches. So we pass, a number of lorikeets and different types of parrots as we're walking along, and just look around and look at the different types of ferns and shrubs and the different types of fruit trees and full size banyans and figs and the different sort of trees that you see in large forest sections. So as we've been walking for maybe about 5 minutes or so, and in the distance, about 50 meters away, you see a small church, a small temple in a clearing. And from a distance, you can see that this temple is made up of smooth stone, very very large river stone, and the pebbles are cemented together with natural clay, with forest clay, and you can see the different colors in the beach pebble and the slightly different tone with the clay which is holding the walls together. And as you gaze up the wall section, you see a very a very heavy and solid wooden roofing structure, very large oak beams, and you can see the main runners from the front of the temple building, the main runners, going from left to right, from the peak of the roof, solid beams maybe up to about 12 inches in diameter, moving down across the wall section, and then you've got a panel of lattice of oak panel from the top of the wall leading up to the peak at the top of the temple building, and the oaken slates, oaken runners, leading down the roof section from the left and the right to guide the rain, to take the rain away from the roof section, and then off to the sides of the main runners run on this roof section. And just look at the lattice. Look at the way, you know, like you see in old England, on the buildings in old England, that the way they overlay the wooden lattice work, the wooden slats on the roof section, moving down from the peak and then down the slope, rows and rows of wooden lattice, moving down, dropping down towards the gutter section to divert the water away. And so we approach the temple, and then we open the door. So you have again for a slight change, we have a teak, a slightly darker species of wood, very very solid door with iron, you know, inlaid with iron rivets and what would you call it, like iron plate for reinforcement and an old fashioned ring buckle to open the slide, the wooden slide in the door panel. And then you imagine taking the lock in your right hand, you know, and sliding the bolt to the left, and then gently pushing the door in. And as you open the door, you look into the inner chamber, and on the floor section you see rough cut granite slate which covers the floor section, and the granite slate, you know, covers the floor section completely right up to the front altar, and you see the mix of colours, the greys, the browns, the whites, the slight pinks in the granite, and on either side, you know, you see rows and rows of similar to a Christian church, we have a seating arrangement, you know, where people can just sit comfortably, and on the wooden seats that you see on both sides of the inner chamber, you know, the very nice large red coloured cushions for people to sit on when they meditation or chanting. And so what I want you to do is walk up the centre of the chamber, and you'll be probably walking maybe about at least say 20-25 steps. You know, you can feel the coolness of the granite tiles on the soles of your feet as you move forward, and as we come up, you know, we have a large white stone Buddha Rupa. And the Buddha Rupa can be any style of Buddha which takes your particular interest. And so just admire the sculpture, admire the headdress. So for example, if we were looking at the Burmese style of sculpture, just look at the headdress of the Buddha, you know, the coils of hair and the shape of the face and the way the eyebrows just, you know, just sweep over the top of the eyes, and the sort of aquiline slender nose above the, you know, the small mouth, and the roundish chin. And as we look on the left and right of the face of the Buddha, we see the large ears, because the large eyes, large ears, which is like the supersensory awareness of the Buddha, the ability to hear and see things which are beyond the range of normal beings, of normal human beings. And we, as we gaze, we drop down, and We see the flowing robe across the body, you know, intricately carved, you know, very, very smooth and flowing, very, very beautiful. And so just admire the robe and the way it flows over the front of the body and then draping down across the arms and draping across the legs on the lower body. And beneath the statue, you see a very, very solidly carven wooden base made in good quality teak, the best teak that money could possibly buy. You know, ornately carved in with very, very small scenes of the Buddha in the front section. And so just imagine little episodes from the Buddha's life carved into the teak. And you know, just from the time the Buddha was enlightened, you know, through the course of his life, the major events of his life, you know, we have the birth and then the first teaching and then preaching to the devas and then the final passing away of the Buddha. You can just visualize these little carvings in the teak panel, the frontal panel. So what we'll do now is we will switch to the breath meditation, and we'll just see the effect on the breath meditation with this kind of visualization. So I want you to now focus on the breathing around the mouth section. So just focus on the feeling around the mouth, which is very, very, very clear and very distinct. And I want you to follow the feeling of the breath on the periphery. So just focus on the feeling of the mouth. You'll feel the breath on the periphery. And we'll keep it quite simple. So just sustain just a very, very relaxed focus on that area for the remainder of the session. So if people feel a bit sleepy with the heat, take nice, deep, full breaths right into the lower abdomen and maximize the level of oxygen which is reaching the brain. If you find yourself still thinking excessively, just relax with those thoughts. Just allow those thoughts to come and go with meditation and just try to maintain your focus and allow them to be part of the practice. you find that you're still thinking too much, switch to investigation. You need to understand those thoughts, those feelings, that mental state. If you don't really understand what you're attached to, you will not be able to let it go effectively. So, try to understand everything about it. If you're thinking about a particular person or events or even like material possessions, try to understand everything about that for maybe just investigate it for about 20 seconds or so. Because the more you go into, increase your insight into this phenomena, the easier it is to relinquish and to let it go. So we're coming towards the end of the meditation, so just reflect back, see if you see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. And I'll ring the gong 3 times, you can open your eyes when you're ready. So, Bono B from Canada, during meditation, I find it difficult to turn off my thoughts and concentrate on the breathing. What should I do? Well, what I usually do, this is this particular practice, it's very, that I've been using for at least well over 12 months or more, and it's very, very good for samadhi, and it's a very, very smooth and stable practice, and it's a body-based practice, but it's an emptiness, perception of emptiness. And you don't have to feel uncomfortable or squeamish with this one whatsoever, because it's very, you virtually won't get any trouble with this. I mean, I don't whatsoever on any level. So what it involves, a very clear way to say one of the best techniques for developing samadhi is to do the emptiness perception on the body. And a particular technique to start with is the skeleton nimitta. So, you know, you get an anatomy book or get a photograph on the web, and you look at the skeleton, you know, top to bottom, front to back, for at least 5 minutes, 4 to 5 minutes, and get a very, very clear, detailed image of the bone structure and the teeth and, you know, and everything else. And then what happens is when you go to walk and sit meditation, you use this mantra, which is like a small trigger. And the mantra is it's very, very simple. As you're breathing out, the skeleton breathing in, breathing out is changeable. So you can use the short mantra, skeleton is changeable, 2 syllables, or skeleton is changeable in nature, which is 3 syllables with a space in between with the breathing cycle. And this particular practice, even though it's body-based, you know, you can do the skeleton, you can do teeth, you can do, say, the five external component parts of the body, head, body, hair, nails, teeth, skin, are empty. You can do one mantra, you can do 5. You can go right through the body with this emptiness principle. And it's really smooth. This one, I'm a big fan of this one, and I tend to mention it a lot, even with the lay practitioners, because it's very effective. You know, if you can't get peaceful, this one should work quite reasonably well. And if you can't get peaceful with one of these objects, you just go right through the body. You know, just pretend you're a medical student. You start from the top of the, you know, from the top of the body, and you just move right down and right through. And you know, the heart is changeable, the kidneys are changeable, liver is changeable. This kind of practice is not when you go to the internal components, it may not necessarily be everybody's cup of tea, but it's very, very smooth. You won't get any irritation, anger, disgust. You know, you could be in you can be married with children, be in a boyfriend, girlfriend relationship, and you won't get any aversion or negativity coming from this practice almost whatsoever. So it's well worth experimenting with. But if you don't like the body practice, which is really firm, if you want to see good results very quickly, you go to the body. But if you want to do the soft and fluffy practice, go to the external environment. Go to things like flowers and trees and shrubs and ferns, and even like insects, like ants and bees and this type of things that you see in the natural world, which are much more, say, user-friendly. So if you feel a little bit squeamish with the body practice, you do the soft and cuddly practice, and if you can't get your mind peaceful within a reasonable space of time, then use the body practice, because it's very, very firm, and it's actually, you get used to it. I do it for like 3 to 4 hours every single day, and I'm very, very comfortable with this particular approach. And also, you can do the little mantras. You can do just one mantra and do it every single minute of the day. So every 60 seconds, do one of these mantras, and you'll get the kind of background samadhi which is there. It might take about 3 to 4 days at the most to kick in, but that kind of samadhi, when you do that very spacious single mantra practice once every minute for 18 hours a day, all your waking hours, that you'll have this very light samadhi that you can actually see inside the mind, and there's enough samadhi there for your contemplation, investigation, practice in daily life. If you really want to accelerate your practice at, you know, to quite a high degree, then you can work with the this very spacious mantra practice for all day and night for 7 days a week. So, Crystal from Canada: sometimes I get scary images while meditating. I just saw hundreds of dark eyes staring at me just now and had to stop meditating. Please advise. Sometimes I get scary images while meditating. I just saw hundreds of dark eyes staring at me just now and had to stop meditating. So, what would I do if that happened to me? I mean, something you could do a switch, something which is similar to this. You could do like just focus, go straight to the emotion. So just imagine you've got these hundreds of scary eyes maybe peering at you from the forest, from the visualization that we just did. Or people can even get flashbacks from past lives. These kind of things are possible. Or even things from childhood, they can get, you know, when they were really young babies, and, you know, this kind of stuff. All sorts of funny, strange things can happen then. So, but go to the emotion. So the emotion which actually affects you when you get this kind of visual image, it could be fear, apprehension, worry, concern, and then that feeling is either changeable or empty in nature. The reason I say this is you want to undercut the power, the force of that mind state. So, you know, so like fear and worry is empty in nature. And, you know, there's no problem with scary eyes, with demons and wild animals and all this kind of thing. You know, you can bring up anything you like in your meditation. It can be the most incredible thing that you can imagine. But once you neutralize the feeling and you undercut the emotional intensity, then these things really aren't a problem. You know, it doesn't make any difference what it is. Once you cut the emotional pressure of the mind state, the forcefulness, it's very easy to deal with. It's just a thought. It's nothing special. It doesn't have any real intensity behind it. It's an easy way to work with it. Has anybody else got any questions? Okie dokie, we'll call it an afternoon.